Working? Yeah, it's working. All right. So, how do you want to do a little intro and
Okay, cool. So, just go.
Yeah.
Okay. Hello everyone. Thanks for joining us for our second Pocha podcast. I'm Sara Inés Calderón
and I'm Elise Redenbeck.
And today we wanted to talk about feminism, but more kind of like feminism in the context of being Latinas, both in the U.S. and then like as opposed to being a Latina in Latin America. I think one thing that Elisa brought up that was a really interesting point was that, you know, obviously in the United States we had this whole feminist movement, and so you would expect that women in the U.S. would be much better off. But yet you look at Latin America and there are like women who are presidents of countries. You look at the fact that there's a lower wage gap between men and women in some of these countries. And so yet in the United States, where we had this feminist movement, there's not been a woman president or vice president. We didn't have like the first female speaker of the house until Nancy Pelosi a few years ago, And you know, there's this whole debate raging as recently as last year in the presidential election about whether or not women can decide what happens in their own bodies. So it's an interesting question. So, I mean, I think we wanted to start just kind of like defining what we mean about feminism, defining what we mean about sexism. So, do you want to go first, Elisa? Like, what is your definition of like sexism and feminism, and what's an example that defines those?
Sure. So sexism is just when women aren't given the equal opportunities that men are given, and it's not always blatant. It can be, you know, a little more subtle or just an everyday thing. And feminism is just the belief that women should be treated equally, and equal to men. Everyday things that I deal with, like working in IT, I get this constant, like, can I talk to your IT guy? Or, like, can you put your IT guy on the phone? Like, I am the IT, you know?
And I'm assuming that you introduce yourself in a way that's like, hello, I'm Elisa, I am your IT helper.
Right? Like, why else would I be answering the phone? Like, I'm not his I'm not the secretary, you know?
Wow. That's crazy. So these people call the IT helpline and you answer, and then they still ask to talk to the IT guy?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Wow. And then, I mean, and a lot of times, too, because of my job, I have to call, like, I'm working with equipment and stuff, so I call, like, the equipment manufacturer, and they're like, oh, sweetie, can you put your IT guy? He'll understand this better. And I'm like...
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow. Yeah, I mean, I kind of definitely agree with you. I mean, I don't go around calling myself a feminist, because for me, this whole idea of feminism goes back to what you were talking about, was this very like white women kind of talking about what they want. I think feminism, I understand it kind of intellectually as being that people are supposed to be equal regardless of their gender. But I think that for me, sexism, and kind of similar to you, working in a male-dominated profession like journalism or tech, what you end up finding out is that, you know, first of all, there's not very many women. And secondly, there's not very many Latina women. And so what ends up happening a lot is that I find in my experience, you kind of get reduced down to this like sexy Latina stereotype.
Oh, yeah.
So it's just like, oh, you really have a fiery temper, huh? You're just
Right. Like, you're really not allowed to express yourself without it being, you know, turned into some stereotype.
Exactly. Yeah, so I think for me, sexism is having seen, like, I have a tangible example for me what sexism is, that I remember being part of a newsroom where the editor, and there was mostly women on the staff, I think there was only one or two men, and one of them kept to himself, and the other one was like a real kind of like brown noser. And so he and the editor would occasionally stand in the newsroom while it was still the workday, mind you, and toss a football back and forth. And I think, I don't say that, oh, you can't toss a football and that's like automatically sexist, but none of the women would have been able to do that with that guy, and then with the editor. And then the guy would get like really like special treatment. Like he could take time to investigate his pet stories. He could come in late and leave early and, you know, come in on the weekends to make up for time during the week and just kind of stuff like
right,
that. Where
like ombria
the rest of us,
stuff that we can't, you know.
Yeah. That we can't access. Like, even if I had gone up to this guy and tried to play football with him, it would not have been, I would not have been his bruh, and I would not have gotten, like, the special treatment.
Right.
What I did get from this editor one time was when the movie critic and I were talking about Drew Barrymore, he came up and he said, I don't like Drew Barrymore, because she always seems like she's almost fat.
Oh my god.
On the verge of being fat is what he said. So,
oh my god,
that was my experience with sexism, and that's how I feel. It's like you're doing the exact same thing, the exact same work, maybe even better backwards, doing flips in high heels, but you don't get praise, you don't get rewarded, you don't get noticed. You actually just get asked to do more work, so the guys can do the real work.
Exactly.
So. But, and then, you know, that's something that, you know, you were saying is kind of like also characterized by these differences that we see in Latin America, you know, that, you know, what is sexism and its relationship to feminism if that's in the United States, but yet in Latin America we're seeing like, you know, different reach for women or different possibilities that you can't have here.
Right. Like we found a different way to even though there's never a formal feminist movement in the way that there was in the United States, like women kind of had to come together and find a way, because I mean it's been a long time since I've lived in, you know, Latin America, but you definitely feel like a second class citizen there as a woman. Like there's, you know, like men are the priority, and like there's, and I think it's changing a lot too. Like I have cousins who are lawyers in Colombia, and like, and cousins who, I mean, all my female cousins work in there in Peru and in Chile, and what was I gonna say? But I feel like, you know, there's a lot more harassment. You're expected to look a certain way. Like you have to be attractive looking all the time. Whereas here, although that's. That's one thing that's weird here. Like, in America, I feel like we like to simplify things a lot. And so, like, if you're an attractive woman, like, you can just be that.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, you can definitely just be that in South America. But, like, just because you're an attractive woman doesn't mean you, you know, you're automatically put into the bimbo category either.
Yeah, I mean, I think that you know, that you pointed out this Latin America, you know, differential is really interesting to me as well, because I spent a couple of semesters living in Monterrey in Mexico, went to school, and I found that there was a lot of women who were the teachers, but most of the administrators were men. I found that it was a private school and it was filled with like wannabe well-to-dos mostly. And so what I found really interesting was the women that the guys would kind of like, you know, cultivate the circle of girlfriends to basically do their work for them, even though the women were clearly much smarter than them. And, you know, obviously there's all that kind of like catcall, you know, harassment, whatever. I even had a professor, one of my professors who I was like one of his top students, and he thought I was really smart. Nonetheless, he's like, no tienes novio, Sara? Like, you don't have a boyfriend? Why don't you have a boyfriend? You're getting a little there. It's like, oh my god, I am 20 years old.
But right, like that's still the priority for a woman, is like to have, you know, get a man and get married, and you know, that's,
well, I don't know, like, I mean, I think one thing we're talking about is maybe because, say, you have this ginormous wage gap in the United States because you have hedge fund managers and like Wall Street tycoons. It's like that's much more accessible to more people in the United States, but then at the same time you still have people like Carlos Slim who like own half the world in Mexico. So I mean, I don't really know why that is, why it is that there's more space for women in some ways in Latin America to have access to power than in the United States, especially since we're supposed to be like more enlightened and more empowered.
You know, I think it's a lot more puritanical here too. Like there's, and I don't know if that comes into play or not, Because like even the other day, it's like you go to get a calling card for South America, and there'll be like a set of boobs on the calling card for whatever reason. Like, what? Like, everything is so sexualized, and it's not, you know. And I don't know if that plays a role here, because I think for a long time there was a stereotype here that like women lead from behind the scenes.
Yeah, that's true.
That's their role, is that they influence, you know, they marry the president, they marry the governors, and then influence them from the private space. And definitely, like, you know, in Latin America, there's always like the aggressive mom who tells his sons everything, you know, what to do. And
yeah.
But why? Yeah, exactly. What is it that enabled, you know, women to become president? And you know, like, you can be much more beloved even, you know, as a woman. Well, I mean, here too, like, Michelle Obama is very well loved and liked.
I think she has higher approval ratings than Barack Obama, actually.
Definitely. But then again, right, she's not making like the super hard choices like Obama is.
Exactly. So, I mean, I don't know. I'm not really sure what it is, but I'd say that they definitely, I mean, I think another thing, and this might be, you know, a contribution, is one, there's not like 300 plus million people in any of these countries. So that might be one factor. I think there, to a certain extent, and I mean, I'm not trying to say that the U.S. is not like totally classist, because clearly we are, since we have such a huge gap between the rich and the poor.
Totally.
But classist. I feel like classism in Latin America is actually like really, it's cultural. I mean, and I'm saying this as a gringa, I'm saying this as like, you know, my experience, it's like, it's okay to be a classist asshole because that's part of your culture.
Yeah.
And it's okay to make fun of the maid because she's poorer than you, you know, and this is just my observations. And so maybe, you know, when you're part of the upper classes, which all of these women are, right?
Right.
You know, you expect more and you expect to be treated differently. Whereas in the United States, we have this myth of meritocracy where you have to work for everything.
Right.
Which, you know, when you're working for a guy who thinks that Drew Barrymore is not a good actress because she's almost fat, it's kind of harder to, you know, move up than if you already kind of start at the top. You don't have to prove yourself as much because you're already, I mean, I don't know, maybe that's part of it too.
I mean, that's a very good point. That's cool. Yeah.
I don't know. Go ahead.
Oh, no. I mean, there's definitely lots of women who are part of the upper class here that expect to be treated a certain way. I've certainly worked for my share of them. Right? But maybe there isn't that. I have noticed that, you know, the like, yo soy divino, you know, like, I'm a gift from God kind of attitude.
Yes.
That some people are just born to, whether they're male or female, if they have that background. But
yeah. So I don't know. So it's an interesting conundrum, one which we're probably not going to solve. I mean, I hate to tell you, Elisa, but we're probably not going to figure this all out today in this podcast.
Really? I was kind of hoping to wrap up sexism in 20 minutes.
I know, right? So, I mean, I don't know. So I guess, like, I think it would be really interesting, because I know last time we were having a conversation of, like, how do you deal with catcalls? Like, I think it would be really cool to kind of, like, talk about, like, how do you in your everyday life deal with this sexism that you encounter in your professional life? Which, again, we want to remind people, we're defining sexism as being treated differently just because you have boobs, which in my case, even though they're small boobs, they are there.
Me too.
So I'm just being treated differently because I have like a slightly bigger chest than like a 12-year-old boy. That sucks, okay?
Oh my God, so everyone in my family is like a double D, and somehow I came out like not even an A. I don't know where the jeans went. I'm like, where?
Girl, don't even start with me right now, girl. I will tell you all about it. Well, I'm like, hi, I have the biggest butt and the smallest boobs of the whole family. What's going on? Hey.
It's all right. You know, dudes are into it.
I have personality.
I know, right? You don't want like some boring, big booby stick figure.
I know. So what do you do when you have those experiences? What happens?
I try to laugh it off. And, like, again, like, because I live in America, like, and I live in a situation where I kind of can laugh it off because it's like, well, you know what? That paycheck's in my name, and I don't care what you say to me. Like, I'm in control of that, and I have my own money, and I control it, and no one else tells me what to do. And if you want to sit there and be a sexist jerk, like, I don't really have to put up with it because, like, I don't answer to a man, you know?
Yeah.
And just knowing that at the end of the day, that I'm in control and, like, I'm the boss of me, you know, it's just, at that point, it's just letting it, you know, kind of let it wash over you and try to deflect it and, you know, try to live a life that, you know, but the thing is, too, it's like this whole, like, women aren't funny because, you know, I'm also a comedian and I try to just live by example, but it doesn't work. You know, it's like people will always have those kind of things like, oh, women don't do this and women don't do that, and like you're living proof of the opposite of that, and somehow like it's hard to change minds.
That's a good point. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you because I feel like, you know, now I also work at a tech company, and I kind of end up being, you know, and I have this like fancy director title, and so what ends up happening is that I get you know, a little bit more deference now. And mm-hmm. when people want to try to, like, bully me into being like, oh, I need to talk to your superior, it's like, well, you know what? I manage this department, so if you don't want to talk to me, I will ask if the CEO or the president has time to talk to you, but I'm pretty sure they're just going to tell you to talk to me.
Right?
Like, if they talk to you. So that's very empowering, is to be in charge. It actually reminds me how I used to have to make a lot more, what is that called? You know, compromises when I was young. And I wasn't in charge.
It's true. I mean, it's nice to know that you are the authority, you know?
Yeah.
And, right, like, when people are like, oh, you know, can I talk to whoever is above you? And I'm like, I am the end of the road. I am the head here of IT. So, like, if you want to call up a friend who's good with computers, best of luck to you with that, you know? Call your nephew or whatever.
Oh my god, I remember when I was younger, because when I my first job out of college, I was like 22. I was a little baby. I was like barely 22. I went to the border, and I was covering immigration, like right after basically like maybe a year or two after the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. And I was also covering Mexico, like running up to the 2006 election. So I was doing work on both sides of the border in South Texas. And so it was always this, like, I remember the guy who was in charge of security at one of the ports was like, hey, Sara, let's go on vacation. Let me take you shopping. And I was literally so stupid. I was like, why would you want to take me shopping? Like, I think being young and dumb kind of saved me a little bit. I didn't know what was going on.
Right? No.
But at the same time, like, after a while, I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah.
And I unfortunately kind of like, okay, like, part of my job is I need to get access, I need to get information, and sometimes that means that I have to deal with, like, ogres and trolls who want to put their beepies inside me. Oh. So I have two choices. I can be a total bitch, and they will not talk to me ever again, or I'm going to have to deal with this. And how am I going to deal with this? Like, I can just be really nice and pretend like I don't know what's going on, which almost seems like to excite them more because it seems like more of a challenge. Or I can just be like really sweet and like let them think that I'm into it so that they like me and they want to keep me coming back. And so it sucks because I end up like having to participate in that so I can do my job. So I think, like we were saying, I'm much happier now that I'm kind of in a position of authority where I don't have to capitulate so much to engaging in that kind of stupidity. So it's interesting how we evolve.
Right? Yeah, no, I definitely think more women in charge, and, like, you know, I don't like it when I hear other women saying, like, oh, I don't like working for women, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I don't like working for assholes. I don't care if you're a woman or a man. Like, we need more women's voices in charge of things. Yeah, and true. Right. So you don't have to like do that kind of crap. Right.
That's true.
Right. And you, but at a certain point too, you have to just decide that you're in charge of your, you know, your own destiny and just be like, you know, I'm not putting up with this. And
yeah,
you know, it doesn't always work
out. But. Yeah, it's not, I mean, it'd be great if we always had that choice, right? So, right. I mean, I don't know, but I think that, you know, that conversation was really interesting for me because I think it kind of helped me realize how much a lot of that is kind of in the past tense, that I talk about it in the past tense now.
Right.
Because don't get me wrong, like, again, the catcalls and all that kind of stuff still kind of happens, but it's more kind of like, I guess it's not as flagrant, maybe not as, you know, busting forth from the seams as it once was.
Well, so that's, I think, cool. You know, you get older, you learn to deal with it better too. And you just kind of know you just kind of lose the will to care, I think, after a while.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like, I got to get this done, right? Like,
yeah,
let's get this done.
That's true. So, well, yeah. Did you have anything else you wanted to add?
No. I wish we could have solved all of this.
She could have solved all the problems.
Of the world.
The world and feminism. But even though we didn't, I had a really great time having this conversation, and I hope everybody who's listening did enjoy it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Be sure to, you know, you follow us on Twitter. Elise is on there at Batronica. And is that right? Did I say that right? Did I pronounce that right?
Yeah, sure. I don't even know.
And I'm on there at Sada Chica D. And yeah, you know, like, check out Bocho.com and tell your friends about this podcast. And maybe we'll solve other problems next week.
And if you guys want to leave, you know, your own experiences and your comments, definitely join the conversation.
Yeah, for real. So thanks so much, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right.